If you have any cross references, this will be very, very similar to 2 Samuel 22. In fact, under Psalms 18, you've got that real fine print. That is almost identical to the very first verse in 2 Samuel, or I think it is 2 Samuel 22. Might be first. No, it's got to be second. It is second. Okay. Okay, so that's basically the first verse and part of the second. But they're not identical, but they're very close. Okay, and it doesn't have to be identical. Okay, but this is David's song after he was delivered from the hand of Saul. As usual, when we read down through this, we will see some doctrines about the second coming that did not take place during David's reign. For example, verse 7 about the earth shaking, and verse 8, smoke coming out of his nostrils and stuff like that. Okay, so Psalms 18 is a long psalm, so we're reading the lyrics of a song, 50 verses. And it's about deliverance. It's about being delivered from one's enemy. He starts off, he says, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. Okay, that part isn't over in 1 Samuel. So it's like you, is that loud? Echo, 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 echo. Okay. Okay, and I know what that thing wants to. Okay, so it's like if you write something and then you want to update it or edit it or revise it. Okay, so he's got more than one song. He says, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. And, of course, that is where we get our strength. Often in a prosperous society, people get kind of big in the head and they think that they did everything. But in Deuteronomy chapter 8, you've got, I think there's 20 verses in that chapter. And that whole chapter is a warning to people who are facing prosperity or living in prosperity. And he said three times to beware. He said, watch out. And then he says in verse 18, he says, I am the one that give you power to get wealth. You see, and that's what he's saying. So if we do have wealth, you say, I work for it. Yeah, but who gave you the strength to work? Who gave you the air to breathe? Who gave you the earth to live on? Okay. Who did that? It's God, obviously. And if he wants to take any of us out, all he has to do is say so. And we don't have any say-so in the matter at all. Okay. And so I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. And then verse 7, or verse 2, you have rock, fortress, deliverer, buckler, strength, horn, high tower, about seven characteristics describing God. Okay, most of them military characteristics or using the military. The Lord is my rock. Okay, Old Testament, there's, as we have in the New Testament, you have a real rock and a fake rock. Okay, and 1 Corinthians 10, verse 4, the rock is Christ. Okay, I got that in the margins. And my fortress, so it's a place you run to. My deliverer, he will help you run from somebody or get away from somebody or something. My God, my strength, in whom I will trust. Okay, of course, we have this in our coinage in this country, in God we trust, but America don't trust God. How do we know that? We've got the United Nations on our shores. That is physical evidence that America doesn't trust God. Alliances with other nations is evidence that a nation does not trust God. Okay, we're not, you know, I realized this, you know, for the last few months, the difference between an isolationist and one of non-intervention, where meaning you want the goods to be able to cross over the boundaries, you know, free trade and all that stuff. But we don't have to kowtow with somebody's army, you know. If somebody wants America to be the policeman of the world, the way it's supposed to be done, first off, is the soldiers volunteer completely. Even while they're in the military, they have to volunteer for the mission. And then secondly, whoever wants them to come must pay for it. That's how it's, that's just kind of a common sense thing. Okay? And so that's it. That's how it's done. And that way the soldier understands that he's doing it for money and he could lose his life for it. Okay? And that's how the Bible lays it out. But when you get in all these alliances, United Nations, you know, it just blows my mind how these stinking bureaucrats say, oh, we gotta keep these UN resolutions. There was a soldier years ago in the 1990s, a homeschool kid, who stood against that when he was ordered to put on a blue beret. And he said, I'm not going to do it. Michael New is his name, lives in Utah, and they gave him a dishonorable discharge. And he's fought that thing, oh man, ever since then. I think he got into the district court, and I don't think he's done yet. I think he has exercised all his remedies in the military courts, and now he's stepping outside of those. But that's quite a thing. Okay, we don't have to fight for the United Nations. What a bunch of nuts. If the United Nations want people to fight, send them out there. Bunch of sissies, they ain't going to go do anything. We pay half the money anyway, this country does. We ought to boot them off our land. Okay, there's nobody can be faithful to their oath to the Constitution and uphold any charter of the United Nations. They're contrary. It's like mixing water and oil. Okay, but my deliverer, my strength, in whom I trust, my buckler. Okay, a buckle keeps things together. Of course, some folks need commercial-built buckles to keep it together. Okay, and the horn of my salvation. The idea of the horn, horn represents power. This is why many of your secret societies will use an animal with horns as their mascot. Okay, the horn, that's through the Bible, that's throughout history also. And then it says, my high tower. Okay, a high tower getting up. When you get up higher, then you could see better. You can see over the terrain and everything. And so when you get up there, you know, to me, always flying an airplane was just always amazing. I just never get over that. I can remember as a kid, the rare times we'd go up to Midway or O'Hare where you could actually walk through the whole airport and go and just sit there and watch those planes take off. It just amazed me, still amazes me how that happens. Okay, but when you get up there, you know, you see how small we are, how insignificant we are. Okay, and so there's the Lord as our high tower. Then he says, I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, so shall I be saved from mine enemies. The sorrows of death compassed me, the floods of ungodly men made me afraid. Okay, now starting at verse 4, he seems to be switching doctrinally to the tribulation and second coming. He seems to be switching to what a Jew will experience in the tribulation. Okay, the sorrows of death. The death is Revelation 6, where you got the pale horse. Death and hell followed it. Compass me, the floods of ungodly men. Floods, many of them, multiple. Water of them. Okay, in Revelation chapter 17, it refers to the people as waters. The waters are people. Okay, the idea of the floods of ungodly men, the amazing thing is the closer we get to the return of Christ, the more wickedness is increased. And the like the bureaucrats, at every level in this country, the federal level, all the bureaucrats are thinking of ways to raise tax money. The state level, they're trying to drum up ways to raise more tax money. The county, and if you live in a town, the municipalities, all of them are, and they are not going to quit. I mean, they don't see it. Aaron was telling me about, I forget who did it, but somebody called, what was that congressman, Dad, he called? Biskowski. This guy had been talked about, you know, property taxes. He's already been out of shape about the rise of the property taxes. And then, so he calls Biskowski. And he's going to, you know, give him a piece of his mind in the common vernacular of the street. And so while he gets this woman on the phone, she says, well, would you like to talk to the congressman? Well, sure. And she didn't push the hold button. So he heard everything she said. And she said something like, do you want me to blow him off? You know, he's just going to gripe about taxes. And the guy said, no, I'll talk to him. And then when he got on the phone, he just cussed him out one time. What do you mean, blow me off? You know, and these guys are way in Washington, D.C., drumming up ways to steal money from you and I. And they're away from us. This is why they got all the bodyguards, so you can't ask them tough questions. You know, that's the purpose of that. This is why the founding fathers were so wise, because they wanted the county level, the sheriff, to be the highest lawful authority, because you can go over there and complain to the guy. He lived in the same county as you. But how many of us are going to go to Washington, D.C. and protest? You don't got the time, you don't got the money, you see? And that's the intentions of it. So you got the few over there who are just raping the people, and they're not going to stop. You know, parasites never have a conference, you know, where they get together and say, if we keep bleeding the host dry, he's going to die. Where are we going to be? You know, he's going to be dead too. They don't think of that. And that's exactly what these bureaucrats are. They're a bunch of parasites. And they ain't going to quit. Okay, and so the floods of ungodly men, it's interesting, somebody said way back in the older days, they said, we traded one tyrant that was 3,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away. 3,000? I wish it was 3,000. It's more than that. 3,000 in our state alone. Okay, and then put that on all 50. And of course, that's what's going on. And, you know, I would wish it's true. I've heard reports of this. I wish the real senators and the real congressmen of the real United States of America would get somebody's attention in the Pentagon where they could oust the imposters of the United States. Now, if you know the law, I've said there's two different governments going on there. There are, my understanding, there are around 42 or 44 states in the low 40s that have elected real senators and real governors according to the constitutional means that the media will give no attention to. And it's been reported, from a friend told me, that if they get together and get a few more to try to complete the states and get someone's attention in the Pentagon will use the military to oust the imposters, meaning Bush, Cheney, all the ones in the United States. United States is different than the United States of America. Two separate entities. And boy, that would certainly be a blessing if that would happen, but I ain't holding my breath. Okay, and so the idea is the closer, the bigger government gets, the more sin is multiplied. Proverbs 28, verse 2, it says, for the transgression of a land, many are the princes thereof, but by a man of understanding the knowledge, and knowledge the state shall be prolonged. Now, I just hit in the political world. What do you think it's like in the spiritual world? You go to these Christian colleges and start dealing with the leadership, you're going to deal with very arrogant, prideful, wicked people. It's all across this country. Okay, the floods of ungodly men. Now, of course, David here is implying they're coming after him, but really it was Saul coming after him, and then, you know, he had some cohorts. verse 5. He said, the sorrows of hell compassed me about, and the snares of death prevented me. Okay, the snares of death. It's like death has a trap. Okay, and during this time period, I had the cross-reference there in Isaiah 28. People make a covenant with death. They make an agreement. Death is, in essence, like personified here. So it's like they're making a covenant or an agreement with Satan, I guess you could say. Isaiah 28 is the covenant. And of course, you know, many of us, the way we're raised, you know, most of us would even dream of, you know, signing some compact with a devil in blood. But, you know, there are people that have gone down that path so bad that they will. None of us, I doubt here, would actually pray and ask a demon to come in our body. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to do that. Okay, but yet, you know, there are multitudes of people who have walked down that wicked path who do regularly and beg for these devils to come in their body and beg for these devils to fornicate with them. I mean, just how whack can people be? Isaiah 28, verse 15, because ye have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with hell are we at agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come up unto us. For we have made lies our refuge, and our falsehood have we hid ourselves. Notice the attitude of these people. And this is often the attitude of Satanists. They believe that they make an agreement with Satan that, okay, they're going to go to hell, but they're not going to suffer like everybody else is going to suffer. They're going to rule over everybody. You know, what a thing. Okay, that was Isaiah 28:15. I don't know if I said the right reference. Verse 18 is kind of a repeat of it. And your covenant with death shall be disannulled, and your agreement with hell shall not stand. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, then ye shall be trodden down by it. Okay, so he said, hey, you can make all the agreements we want, but I'm going to violate it. You're going to hell anyway. Okay, so Psalm 18, verse 6. In my distress I called upon the Lord and cried unto my God. He heard my voice out of his temple, and my cry came before him even into his ears. Now notice in this verse the word called and cry are used together, meaning it's an urgency. You can see with the context of the verse, this is an urgent prayer. He's in distress. And you know, in this day and age where you have the fundamentalists, you know, going around and giving this Roman road to people, which is a good thing, okay, and trying to get them to go 1, 2, 3, repeat after me. It says in Romans, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord. That word call implies urgency. If I'm witnessing to somebody, going trying to give them the gospel, and there's absolutely no concern in their heart, none whatsoever, I don't make salvation that simple for them. I give them more of the law. Teach them about the law, and God is holy and God is just, to get them to realize they're in desperate straits. Hoping that they realize they're in desperate straits. Now, when I see conviction, then the gospel can be made simple. Why? Because they're ready to come to Christ. There's an urgency there. Often the Spirit will help you with that. But if there's no urgency, no care, no concern, what do they need to know? They need to know that they are guilty under the law of sin. And, you know, most people who haven't been involved in court, you know, they don't see the urgency of going to court, especially the first couple times, and how you do pray and cry out to God. Okay, but we need to realize the biggest court day is when we're standing in front of God. And you ain't going to buy them off that day, where a lot of them do in court today. Okay, and we need to keep that in mind. Often now, the more you get in court, the more it kind of gets, you know, you kind of get used to it. Okay, Okay, but even at that, this idea of calling upon the name of the Lord is more of an urgency. In the old days, they would kind of call it praying through. I don't believe you got to go, completely that route, where somebody just go out in the woods and pray through for an hour or 2 hours and try to get a hold of God. Salvation is simple. If somebody's ready to get saved, they need to get saved. And they don't have to pray through all that stuff. You can do it in seconds. But if there's no urgency, none whatsoever, people need to get under conviction. And the only way you can do that is you keep telling about the law, and the law says this, and you are guilty in front of the law, and you are guilty, and you are guilty, and this holy God is going to send you to hell if you don't realize your guiltiness, and then they start getting concerned about it. Okay, and they got to be desperate. Okay, Psalms 18, verse 7. Now, verse 7, then the earth shook and trembled. Okay, earthquake. Okay, now the earthquake, of course, we don't have any records of anything like this taking place with David back in those days. Not saying it didn't happen. But this idea of the earth shaking and trembling, the foundations also of the hills moved and were shaken because he was wroth. He, God, was angry. The earth shakes at the presence of God. We scoff at people who talk about Mother Nature and all that stuff, which we should. But the earth does have feelings. Okay, the earth does have emotions. And the earth shakes for two basic reasons, if you believe what the Bible says. Now, I understand the scientists say, the faults here and all that kind of stuff. But there's two basic Bible reasons for the earth shaking or the earth quaking. Okay, one is the presence of the holiness of God. The earth shook, the mountain shook in Exodus chapter 19 at the Mount Sinai when the Ten Commandments were given. The earth shook on the day of Calvary because God's holiness and justice was made manifest. The other reason the earth shakes is because of the wretchedness of man. Okay, Leviticus, I think it's 18:27, around that range. Maybe I can look at it real quick. It talks about the earth vomiting out its inhabitants. And that reference is reference to sodomites. Leviticus 18, that's 25? There it is, 18:25. Okay, and so isn't it interesting where the earthquakes strategically are located in our country, the vast majority? The last big one we had, the real big one, is out in California, and the center of that earthquake was where 90% of the child pornography is produced in this country, out there in the land of fruits and nuts. Okay, and I understand we got a big one through the Midwest that they're claiming is going to be a 10 Richter scale someday. Probably the tribulation. Okay, but this is the reason for the earth shaking. For God's holiness and for man's sinfulness. The biggest earthquake ever that's going to be is found in Isaiah 24. Any of you feel the last earthquake we had about a month ago? Yeah, I felt it. Huh? Did it? We were awake, Jan and I, and she thought it was a helicopter over our house. I thought earthquake, but I didn't say anything. And so that was interesting. Okay, Isaiah 24, verse 19. The earth is utterly broken down, the earth is clean, dissolved, the earth is moved exceedingly. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard, and shall be removed like a cottage, and the transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it. See, there's the reason, the transgression of man. And it shall fall and not rise again. Uh-huh. Cyclone? Yeah, Nate, you mean... was that caused by an earthquake?
No, it was just a cyclone. Just another God's wrath thing.
Just another thing of wrath of God.
In this country, they won't let God in. They won't let missionaries in there for years. For 50 years, you can't get a missionary.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't the play about Burma?
I don't know. Was the last play about Burma?
Where was that missionary lady from? And that last play?
She was from the Netherlands. You should remember that. She was Dutch.
Right.
Indonesia? It was Indonesia. One of them places over there. Okay. What's that? Myanmar or Myanmar? Yeah. Yeah, okay, 18. And there went up a smoke out of his nostrils. His, who, seven, God, God's wrath. This is the wrath of God. There went up a smoke out of his nostrils and fire out of his mouth devoured. The coals were kindled by it. Okay, so it's funny. Years ago, I was talking to this lady who goes to the Bailey Corner Baptist Church. You know, I think they got spittoons in that church. You just got to know them places. And one time they were wanting to have a rock-a-thon and they needed our gymnasium to use it. Now, rocking chair-a-thon is what it was. They were going to sit in these rocking chairs. And Brother Delmer, he didn't know anything about it. Boy, he said, when I walked in the gym, it was like somebody had set flames to the whole building. Them people just smoked like fiends. Them people in that Baptist church. And I came across one of these ladies, and I asked her about salvation, if she knew she's going to heaven. And she said, well, the Bible says where the tree falls towards the north and towards the south, there it shall be. I said, what did you say? Well, the verse is in Ecclesiastes 11:3. Now, ain't that a funny answer? Are you saved? Well, where the tree falls towards the... You know, and I just kind of looked at her kind of odd because I thought that was kind of odd. And we got a little discussion and she brought up the things about cigarettes. You know, I don't bring that up to people, but she brought it up, and I said, hey, did you ever see that where Leviathan's got smoke come out of his nostrils? Where's that at? I said, Job 41. You ought to go look at that. And that was about the end of that conversation. But it's kind of funny. I had a guy this afternoon ask if he could smoke outside here. I said, which way is your nose turning? This way or this way? I don't think he got it. This way means like a chimney, so smoke can go up. You know. But wouldn't that be a bummer if your nose was that way? Because you'd blow your head off every time you sneezed. But even at that, you know, there's a lot worse things in life. But in this case, verse 8, this is where we have the common expression often in cartoons. How do they display cartoons when they want to make a character look angry? They got smoke coming out of them. And that's why. Okay, that's why. Verse 9, he bowed the heavens also and came down and darkness was under his feet. Who's he? Well, in this context, it's got to be the Lord Jesus. Verse 10, he rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yea, he did fly upon the wings of the wind. Okay, flying carpet. Well, the cherub, remember there are five original cherubs, now four. Cherubs are winged beings, not angels. 11, he made darkness his secret place, his pavilion round about him were dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. Dark waters, I don't know, some of that stuff is weird. It's beyond me. There's something about dark waters, going deeper down into the waters, where you're dealing down in the deep of the Atlantic or Pacific and deep further down. Now, I have the cross-reference there over to Genesis 1, verse 2, where it says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. It was singular, if I remember right. And then it says, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Okay, there's something about that. That was a worldwide flood, Genesis 1-2. I mean, when the earth is covered with water, that's a flood. Okay, but this idea of dark waters, it's like the Lord, with him, darkness is nothing. I mean, he could see in the dark. If he's got animals that can run through woods in a pitch blackness from our perspective, but they can run through the woods without running into a tree, Don't you think he can do that? You know, and so this, you know, there's, I do believe there's some things in the Bible that's so far over our head, because we just can't imagine some of these things. Verse 12, at the brightness that was before him, his thick clouds passed, hailstones and coals of fire. Hailstones are mentioned throughout the Bible. Okay, it's a reference to the second coming. The brightness is referenced to like the sun, S-U-N, the brightness of Jesus Christ coming back. The Lord also thundered in the heavens, and the highest gave his voice, hailstones and coals of fire. It's all a picture of the second coming. People on earth will be scared to death. Okay, and the only reason we'll be excited about it is because we'll be behind this. But still, you know, it's going to be a fear there. Verse 14, yea, he sent out his arrows and scattered them. And he shot out lightnings and discomfited them. Okay, this is where I've mentioned that the Lord, when he comes back on his chariot, it shoots flame out. Okay, like nuclear radiation where it's going to melt them on the spot. Zechariah 14:12 says their eyes melt out of their sockets, okay, and their flesh melts off of them right there. Okay, this is all a picture of the second coming of Christ. This is what he's going to do to them. He shot out lightnings. Now, isn't that interesting? He shot out lightnings. But the devil can do that also. I don't have the cross reference there, but in Revelation chapter 13, verse 13 through 15, one of the techniques Satan will use to convince people that he is God is that he can torch people on the spot. You know, like it's like a common thing we see or hear about that, man, if lightning strikes a guy dead, you know, God struck him dead. But the devil can do that. It's interesting. I mentioned I mentioned that the Israel, some of the leadership of the nation of Israel gave President Bush an honorary thing back in January when he went over there. And these were some of the bigwigs of Jerusalem, the Sanhedrin, all this crowd. People were trying to get the temple going, the temple garments. And you know what they called President Bush? And they meant it to be a great compliment. And he took it as a great compliment, but they called him the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. That's Ezekiel 38. That's the Antichrist. They are so, the nation of Israel, the leadership is so whacked out in the Bible, they took a reference to the Antichrist, of the Antichrist, and applied that to President George Bush because they think he's the protector of Israel in the Middle East. Well, isn't this, I mean, just amazing how the Bible is? When Jesus was on earth, what did their leadership call Jesus Christ? They call him the devil, Beelzebub. Well, guess what? When the devil shows up, what are they going to call him the first 3.5 years? They're going to call him Christ. And then in the middle, then they, 144,000 get it figured out. He ain't the Christ, he is the Antichrist. But it takes him 3.5 years to get that figured out. And that's the amazing thing about the blindness of Israel. That, to me, one of the most amazing things about God is that he puts it down in print. What's going to happen right in front of these people's face, and they read the words like I read the words, and they don't get it. It's amazing to me how God can hide his truth right in the front of people's faces. Okay, and of course the devil does this too. If you read literature, media, books, you're going to find that the devil's got his plan right out in front of us. He so arrogantly put it back on your dollar bill, announcing the birth of the New World Order. And people see that, and, oh, what's that mean? It means the devil wants to run the world. Okay, means what he says what he means. But, okay, this is the Lord and the lightning, verse 15. Then the channels of waters were seen, and the foundations of the world were discovered at thy rebuke, O Lord, at the blast of the breath of thy nostrils. Now, is that what he did at the Red Sea, where the way he parted the Red Seas is God blew through there a cold breath in there, split the waters, and then when they walked on through, and then that ice, as it started to melt, come back, that's when the Egyptian soldiers walked down through there. Now, is he going to do something like this, where he's going to split the universe so that you could see right into the throne of God? That's what it looks like. Because it says that the people will see him on his throne, and they're going to hide their, they're going to ask the rocks to fall on them to hide there from the face of the wrath of the Lamb. So what we have between here and heaven is water. And during the rapture, you know, I'm glad it's going to be a quick thing, because if we look back, we'd probably see a red dragon coming through, trying to chase us like Pharaoh did to the Israelites. But it's going to be so fast, he ain't going to get a chance to get in there. Okay, and so this is an amazing thing about God. Verse 16, he sent from above, he took me, he drew me out of many waters. And that's the amazing thing about God, is you've got 6 billion people on planet Earth, and he allowed you to have eyes that are open to the gospel. He allowed you to have eyes open that God has preserved his words perfectly. You know how many people don't see that? It's an amazing thing. I mean, if that ain't something to brag about God. Verse 17, he delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me, for they were too strong for me. They prevented me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. My stay is like it's a legal term where you have a court stay, meaning that the process has to stop. Okay, the Lord is my stay. He can stop them anytime he wishes. Verse 19, he brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. Well, I know that's not true in my case. Or yours. The Lord rewarded me according to the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Now this is something different between the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Lord rewarded me, David, according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. David was a man after God's own heart. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, except for that time with Uriah. But he still did. And notice that God will look at a man's whole picture, the entire picture of a person. He says, I have kept the ways of the Lord and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and I did not put away his statutes from me. Even when Nathan came to him, when David was in that backslidden state, and asked him to pass judgment, he passed the right judgment, even when he was out of fellowship with God. That's how much David, how close he was to God. And then Nathan turned that picture around and said, you're the man, tag, you're it. And then David repented. 23, I was also upright before him, and I kept myself from mine iniquity. Therefore hath the Lord recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands in his eyesight. With the merciful thou shalt show thyself merciful. With the upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. Now, does that ring a bell with the Beatitudes? Okay, and so that's the doctrinal footing. The Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount is about the second coming or the millennium. With the pure thou wilt show thyself pure, and with the froward thou wilt show thyself froward. Thou wilt save the afflicted people, but wilt bring down high looks. High looks, interesting he throws that in there. High look, a proud look. These six things that the Lord hate, yea, seven are abomination unto him, and the first one is a proud look. Okay, he's going to bring down the high looks. Verse 28, for thou wilt light my candle. The Lord my God will enlighten my darkness. For by me I have run through a troop. For by thee I have run through a troop. And by my God have I leaped over a wall. As for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried. He is a buckler to all those that trust in him. For who is God save the Lord? And who is a rock save our God? But when you sit down and think about God, meditate about Him, there is no God like Him. None. People in these secular schools, they study religion a lot of times, and they major in religions, and all the world religions are the same. No, they're not. Not when you analyze them. All the pagan gods are perverts. All of them are. They're perverts, and they force themselves upon their followers in a form of rape. That's what pagan gods do. That's what Peter Pan did. Okay, the god Pan. That's what they all do. They're all perverts. But our God didn't like that. Our God wants us to voluntarily come to Him. Our God is powerful and honorable. Most times when people get power, they get dishonor. It's a common saying. Was it Lord Acton that said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely? Now, that's kind of a half-truth. It's really a wicked heart that corrupts. Because there have been people that do have power that have been good people. Queen Victoria is an example. And of course our God is an example. Okay, and so, but generally that's, you know, not a bad saying. But who is a rock save our God? It is God that girdeth me with strength and maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hinds' feet and setteth me upon my high places. He teacheth my hands to war, so that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms. Okay, now, under the Old Testament, that could be a literal fighting. In the New Testament, it's more of a spiritual fighting. But even at that, in the New Testament, you know, we need to learn self-defense. There's nothing wrong with self-defense and understanding what's going on, not being a victim of things. Okay, he teaches my hands to war. Verse 35, thou hast also given me the shield of thy salvation. That shield is mentioned in Ephesians 6. And thy right hand hath holden me up, and thy gentleness hath made me great. Now, pick that up. Notice that. His gentleness made me great. A lot of times people think it's harshness or strictness is what's going to help a person become better. A lot of times it's your gentleness. I think one of the most fascinating things I watched was when, Jeff Adams, when he was breaking your horse. I mean, you think about when you break a horse, you get on the back and you just, you know, ride that thing and, you know, you beat that thing. And the way he did that was just a phenomenal thing. We, you know, videotaped it. I tried to videotape it, and he didn't have enough time. But it was amazing how he did that. And basically what he did for an hour is he just got the horse to run around the whole corral for the solid hour. And that horse was just running, and he would just spook it some more and get it to run and get it to run and get it to run. And he went, hit it, didn't do anything to it. And after about an hour, he said, now watch, we're going to go in a corner, and that horse is going to look at me, and I'm going to turn around and walk away, and it will follow me. And that horse did exactly what he said. It was amazing how he did that. Okay, and it's just in that mindset of that horse. And then eventually he put a cloth on its back, and then eventually he would kind of jump on its back, and every time it would get spooked, he'd jump off. It was such a gentle process. And of course, he didn't have time to finish the thing, but boy, was it neat to watch. And that's often how God deals with us. Okay, the gentleness of Christ is mentioned by Paul. I don't have a reference there. You could use 2 Corinthians 10, verse 1, about the gentleness of Christ. Think about gentleness when you transplant seeds. When you put your little seed in your little greenhouse and the seed's about this tall, and then you got to take that and put it in a garden, you got to be real gentle with that stuff. You just can't whip it in there. You got to be gentle with these things and with kids. Verse 36, thou hast enlarged my steps under me that my feet did not slip. I have pursued mine enemies and overtaken them. Neither did I turn again till they were consumed. I have wounded them that they were not able to rise. They are fallen under my feet. Now, for us in the New Testament, those enemies would not be flesh and blood. Those enemies would be principalities and powers, rulers of the darkness and spiritual wickedness in high places. Let's see, 39. Thou hast girded me with strength unto the battle. That's Ephesians 6 for us. Thou hast subdued under me those that rose up against me. Again, that's spiritual warfare. Thou hast given me the neck of mine enemies that I might destroy them that hate me. Under the Old Testament, literal flesh and blood. The New Testament, those are all spiritual things. Next, it's interesting, he throws that in there. Verse 41, they cried, but there was none to save them, even unto the Lord, but he answered them not. Then did I beat them small as the dust before the wind. I did cast them out as the dirt in the streets. Thou hast delivered me from the strivings of the people, and thou hast made me the head of the heathen. A people whom I have not known shall serve me. Now there's David, but of course that's going to apply to Jesus during the millennium. That is going to be one of the most amazing things to me, is how people reject Christ in the millennium. Man, I can't imagine that. It's 44. As soon as they hear of me, they shall obey me. The strangers shall submit themselves unto me. Strangers are foreigners, Gentiles. The strangers shall fade away and be afraid out of their close places. The Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. It is God that avengeth me and subdueth the people under me. Okay, for us in the New Testament, a good reference for that is Romans 12, 19 to 21. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. 48, he delivereth me from mine enemies, yea, thou liftest me up above those that rise up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man, singular, probably the Antichrist, in David's case, King Saul. Therefore will I give thanks unto thee, O Lord, among the heathen, and sing praises unto thy name. Great deliverance giveth he to his king, historically David, doctrinally Jesus Christ, and showeth mercy to his anointed, to David, and to his seed forevermore. The seed is reference to Jesus Christ. Okay, and so, throw in thoughts about the second coming. Okay, that's Psalm 18. Any questions when we covered? Okay, prayer requests. Anybody have anything?